Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter since 1987, covering the inner workings and big events and biggest stories and smallest little things also in the pro wrestling industry since 1987, back when Ronald Reagan was finishing up his second term as president of the United States, going on three decades. And I'm also editor of PWTorch.com and MMATorch.com and host of this, the PW Torch Livecast, a daily live call-in, current events-driven and sometimes nostalgia-driven live pro wrestling podcast here at PWTorchLivecast.com. We welcome your phone calls on this program. Give us a call at 515-605-9345. Jim Valley is my guest, and he is the host of Saturday Morning Wrestling, the nostalgia part of the PW Torch Livecast lineup. Jim, welcome back to the midweek flagship PW Torch Livecast on, we should mention the date, Wednesday, December 7th, 2016. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you, Wade. It's great to be here, and always a pleasure to talk some current event wrestling.
Excellent. I'm glad to do so. We'll mix in some larger perspective, because I think there's some need for it this week, something that I didn't talk much about on over the last 3 days, actually, on the VIP roundtable after TLC in the live cast Raw postgame show or the Wade Keller Hotline, or last night after SmackDown on the live cast when it was perhaps especially needed, is something that Jason Amati wrote about in a column I just posted a few minutes ago on PWTorch.com. I think everybody should check it out. I think it's an important statement on something going on in WWE right now, which is, Jim, the lack of selling major moves and major matches. And this is something that, I mean, I bet if you ask some of the wrestlers who are on your program on Saturdays, some of the, quote, old-timers about this, if they were watching the current product, I think they would just scoff or shake their head at what wrestlers go through and how little long-term selling there is. And we've had people, Jim, talk about, you know, selling within a match. You know, we talked about this on the ROH pay-per-view on Friday, you know, some brutal moves. And heck, TLC came up again. There's these brutal moves, but are wrestlers getting the most out of the chances they take that might lead to, oh, I don't know, ankle injuries and worse? And when you look at what James Ellsworth went through last week on Raw, which is what Jason Amati was writing about, and he's a jobber. He's a pathetic human being, according to JBL, a turtle without a shell, a human slug. He took what Mauro Ranallo called the mother of all styles clashes off the ring steps onto the floor, and he was able to interfere on Sunday, 6 days later, and he was ready, walking ready and able to wrestle, willing to wrestle AJ Styles on Tuesday on SmackDown. It was actually only 5 days later at TLC. Is this a problem, Jim? Or if you and I complain about it, you haven't yet, we'll see. If we complain about it, are we just not with the times? Are we not understanding that, quote, people know pro wrestling is just a Roadrunner cartoon with real human stuntmen and women, and it's no fun if they actually have to sell the moves and make them seem like they hurt longer than 5 to 20 seconds?
Well, selling is really kind of the heart of wrestling. Selling is how the babyface garners sympathy. It's how the heels get heat. I mean, it's really more important than how many moves you can do, than if you can do, you know, a 450 Firebird splash or what have you. It's the most important aspect of wrestling. And if you can't get people emotionally invested, then, you know, then they're not going to watch. What's the whole point? Just to see cool moves? Well, after a while, you know, seeing cool moves, you burn out on on that. You know, I was talking the other day about, you know, my favorite cards, and, you know, my favorite card seems like every year is the Royal Rumble, and not because it's by far the best match, but it's just interesting and it's fun. And you get to see that, that selling, you get to see the disappointment on people's faces and the hope in their eyes when maybe they're going to win, or, you know, those types of things. It makes the stakes seem bigger, and on an individual match basis, it can certainly help. And you talk about selling, you know, last night on SmackDown Live, you know, James Ellsworth sold the Dirty Deeds by Dean Ambrose, but really that's out of context to the rest of what we see each and every week. You know, watching 205 live, you know, same thing. Yeah, there's definitely an issue, and I don't know that it's a matter of being behind the times, because it really is the heart of what you need to do to hook people into wrestling.
Yeah, it seems like wrestlers go to so much effort to do big moves, yet you have diminished returns on what those big moves, the impact of the big moves on the viewer, if we are conditioned and trained as viewers, as we are on any show, to believe that there's no danger, no long-term danger to these moves. So it becomes more of a "this is awesome" moment than getting wrapped up and being fearful of the moment. If Walking Dead, I refer to Walking Dead sometimes because I think there's some parallels that, you know, Walking Dead's not a perfect series, but they have some internal rules. And that is, you're scared of zombies even though they move really, really slowly, because they gather and eventually swarm you if you don't escape and get to safety. And if people who got bit by a zombie and they started chewing on their flesh were able to punch the zombie in the head and their skull would just melt, and that's how you beat them. You just had to punch them in the skull and their skull would melt, and then the wound would just heal itself and you'd be fine on the next episode. All the fear and all the drama of that comes with watching zombies corner one of the main characters would be taken away, and it would just become a, oh, this is cool, let's see how he eats his flesh, and let's see how what the makeup people did to make the zombie look scary and creepy. And it would be cool in that sense. It might still be fun, but you wouldn't have that drama of thinking, is this main character about to have a puncture wound from a zombie that would lead to them dying and becoming a zombie? There would be, if Walking Dead took away those dire consequences, then all the special effects that all the makeup people work really hard to do would be diminished to just, that was an awesome special effect moment. And that's what wrestling has become, is there's a reason there's this is awesome chance, as opposed to what I believe is still possible, because it's possible on Walking Dead, even though we know they're actors with special effects. It's still possible, Jim, isn't it, to get fans wrapped up in the moment when they're immersed in watching a show or at a building where chanting this is awesome after big moves would be the last thing on their mind, because instead they're going to be wrapped up in the drama of what will that move do to my favorite character or to my least favorite character.
Yeah, I mean, Hulk Hogan made a career out of selling and then doing the big Superman comeback. You know, that's a key part of wrestling, and I think it gets overlooked a lot. And whenever you see, you know, Twitter feed, or you see things on, you know, the Torch message board, and people talk about who's the best worker in the world and who's the best, you know, who's the best wrestler, and it always seems to come down to the aggressiveness and the how spectacular their moveset is, as opposed to being a great seller. You know, one of the guys that comes to my mind who was always great at selling is your, you know, your friend and frequent live cast guest and a VIP guest is Sean Waltman, X-Pac. He was amazing at selling, and more than anything, I think that's what really got him over, was that underdog babyface fighting from underneath, and it seems like he's almost going to die, and then suddenly, you know, he finds just a little bit of energy and a little bit of inspiration from the fans and makes that great underdog comeback. I think that's a big part of X-Pac's career that gets overlooked.
All right, we have opened the conversation, and you are welcome to join the conversation, as several of you are already waiting in the caller queue to do. If you are interested in joining the program today, please give us a call, 515-605-9345. That is 515-605-9345. We're going to go to our first break of the program. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Jim Valley. This is the PW Torch Livecast Wednesday midweek edition. Tomorrow is Interview Thursday at the same time, 1 Eastern. Friday is Primetime Friday with Bruce Mitchell and Travis Bryant starting at 7 Eastern. And Jim, you are hosting Saturday Morning Wrestling with a wrestler from the Monday Night War era. Why don't you plug your show, some recent guests who have been on the show, and who's coming up on Saturday, and then right after that, we'll go to our break.
Yeah, we try to have a lot of fun on Saturday and just, you know, talk about stories, talk about the good stuff and the silly stuff that we watched when we were growing up, things that got us hooked into wrestling, and thus it's Saturday Morning Wrestling, which harkens back to the days of WWE Superstars and WWF Mania and all of those
AWA All-Star Wrestling.
AWA All-Stars, exactly, and World Class and Memphis Wrestling, and you know, so much of wrestling history was happening on Saturday mornings live or on tape delay. This Saturday, we've got a guy, Dave Sullivan, Evad Sullivan from WCW, who was the number one Hulkamaniac, who played kind of a simpleton character. He was also the Equalizer in Portland, Oregon. And this past week on Saturday Morning Wrestling, we had Len Denton, the Grappler, on, one of my favorites and one of the best storytellers. And he told a story about a little misunderstanding that led to a skirmish in a Portland dressing room where Dave Sullivan punched Scotty the Body, who was later Raven. And Scotty had to go out with a bit of a shiner, and Len wanted to capitalize on it since he was the booker. So he told the camera guys to zoom in on Scotty's face so they could get a good look at what turned out to be a real life black eye as opposed to one that was painted in. But I mean, these are the kind of stories we talk about, things you may not have known, and just kind of, you know, fun stories, and people ran the road and it was still real to them. And we've had the Grappler on. We've had Matilda the Hun, Queen Kong from the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. We've had Dave Milliken, the Belt Guy, on. B. Brian Blair, just a lot of different people just telling their stories from their perspective. And, you know, we try to tell some things and tell some stories that maybe you haven't heard before. We answer your questions from the past and try to put it all in perspective, whether you're, you know, reminiscing or maybe you weren't alive then and you want to learn some things. And that's kind of what Saturday Mornings is all about. And it's every Saturday morning, it's live, 8:30 on the West Coast, 11:30 on the East Coast in the United States. And of course, you can download it commercial free if you're a PW Torch VIP member, or as always, you know, listen live and call in just like this show.
And you can find past editions of Saturday Morning Wrestling. If you are in the mood for a nostalgia kick, you can go to pwtorchlivecast.com. And then right under our logo, there's the menu. And latest on demand is the menu option you want. And you'll see a drop menu of the programs: Raw post shows, SmackDown post shows, midweek, Interview Thursday, Primetime Friday, Saturday Morning Wrestling, and pay-per-view post shows. And you should then select Saturday Morning Wrestling with Jim Valley, and you can scroll through all of his recent interviews, including the original, we'll call him the original James Ellsworth, Randy Mulkey, among the fun guests who Jim has had on his program. So check that out, PW Torch Livecast, and then go to Saturday Morning Wrestling, and you can zoom down to Austin Idol. George South has great stories to tell, and he's an interview worth seeking out, Jim, going back a ways also, right?
Yeah, Austin Idol was amazing. We had Magnum TA on talking about Dusty Rhodes. We've done a lot
JTG.
Of different people. Pardon me?
JTG and Diana Hart talk about a varied list of guests also. Right, and speaking of Saturday Morning Wrestling, Randy Hales from Memphis. So, lots of cool retro guests.
Bill Dundee was great talking
Lance
about
Russell.
All the things that happened with Lance Russell. A lot of different people from a lot of different territories, And, you know, the other thing is, you know, you mentioned the Mulkeys tying into James Ellsworth. You know, I do try to look for modern day trends and tie it into things. So it was kind of fun when Ellsworth was first kind of hitting his stride to talk to Randy Mulkey, a guy who was very much in a very similar position, and talk about that. And kind of compare, you know, what's happening now to what happened then, and it's been a lot of fun, and I think we've done some really cool stuff. So I don't think it's a waste of your time. I think you should definitely search it out and to see some stuff. Rhonda Shear from USA Up All Night. You know, she had some really interesting stories from the mid 90s and WrestleMania 10. You know, some unusual guests. We try to do some things that are different, and I think it shows.
And you will be celebrating 1 year anniversary of Saturday Morning Wrestling next month. So look forward to that. All right, let's head to our break. I encourage you to check out that column I spoke of by Jason Amati on the lack of selling in pro wrestling. He makes a lot of good points, very well-written article, and I think it is persuasive. I would like to see some of the wrestlers, bookers, promoters, Vince McMahon himself, read that column and defend themselves. I'd like to know their rationale for what they've kind of let slip away. It's especially egregious with WWE because they have so much programming, and that might be their number one defense. It's, hey, we got to fill hours of TV, and I think there's other creative ways to do it. But here's some word on our website, pwtorch.com. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com. We are back live. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Jim Valley from Saturday Morning Wrestling. Join him 11:30 Eastern this Saturday with Dave Sullivan. Let's start taking phone calls. Our phone number, 515-605-9345. We've had great callers the last two nights in the PW Torch livecast I hosted Monday night right after Raw and Tuesday night right after SmackDown, and we will continue that trend with Sean from Columbia, Missouri. Welcome back to the show, Sean. What have you got for us today?
Yeah, hey, Wade, just a couple of quick points I wanted to make. Earlier this year, when Chris Jericho made his return, I kind of thought, you know, he was dead in the water, and as far as, like, The Miz goes, I was never a huge fan. I never really thought he was entertaining. But I have to admit, like, the better part of this year, the reason I tune into SmackDown and Raw is to watch those two. They've just been so on fire and entertaining. Like, the whole Miz, the participation award thing, like, even the crowd was getting behind him saying, you deserve this. And so how long do you think, I know they're trying to keep heat on Miz with the whole Daniel Bryan thing, but how long do you think they can keep, like, Jericho and Miz heels with them getting such crowd reactions? How long do you think they can keep this up before they have to turn him face?
I hope with Miz it's quite a while, because I actually think Miz is doing a really good job as a heel. I think, you know, hiding behind Maryse last night on SmackDown when Ambrose was going to dive at him is classic heel moves. I want him to continue to work hard to not be so entertaining that more and more people cheer him. But he is doing great work, and I think that people who watch wrestling from the perspective that largely listeners of this show do, you know, which is appreciating the art of it, are gaining a respect for Miz that I think would have been a little bit flabbergasting 2 or 4 or 7 years ago. Because I think he is setting a template. He's establishing a template for what a heel should act like and be like. Now, that said, I think he needs, and this is the storyline's not serving his character well, he's making too many good points. And that's part of why I think people are warming up to him. Like last night on Miz TV, he was making all these points to Ambrose about, well, how can you blame Ellsworth for turning on you? You treat him like crap. And, you know, we've been saying this for weeks. I mean, the way Ambrose kicked Ellsworth out of the building a few weeks ago, and not only, like, kicked him out of the building for his own protection, but added a few verbal jabs that were just superfluous. They were unnecessary, kind of mean-spirited. And he's been doing that all along. I think it's better for Miz to stay heel, but the material, when he makes points, they need to be hypocritical, not on point. Otherwise, people will start sympathizing with him more. Jericho, I think, is on the fast track to babyface based on what we saw on Monday's Raw. Jim, your thought on this, and I'll continue to kind of pry some history out of you as a long-term student of the game, too. Are there other wrestlers that you can think of historically, territory or nationally, where good examples of heels who just became a little too entertaining, or not a little too entertaining, that's a bad connotation, but entertaining enough that fans just eventually turned them themselves?
Well, I think, you know, one of the earlier ones that I just happened to be watching the best of Saturday night's main event, just to have it on TV right now while I'm doing the show on the network. But, you know, Randy Savage was so amazingly athletically gifted and had such intensity and such incredible moves at the time and was such a groundbreaker that fans were cheering him prior to when he finally turned babyface. You know, he's a great example of that. And it wasn't that he was so clever on interviews or was witty or funny. It was just that his athleticism was so amazing at the time. And I think fans were dying to cheer him. In that same vein, Legion of Doom, the Road Warriors, they were so dominating and, you know, won so many matches and plowed over everybody. And, you know, so many people identified with that and wanted to be like that, that they were baby faces before they were ever turned. You saw it with Hulk Hogan growing up in the AWA when he came in. He was just so charismatic that Vern just went with the crowd and, you know, turned him babyface, even though it really wasn't that strong of a babyface turn. You know, there's a lot of history of that that has gone down through the years. Talking about Miz, I think turning him babyface would kill him, because then he's not snarky. He's not, you know, everything that makes him the Miz and makes him so appealing. You know, talking about the Miz, I think that you really have to give him credit for really understanding what the WWE is all about, what Vince McMahon wants out of him, what they consider to be good work, what they consider to be good matches and good interviews and everything. And, you know, I think earlier this year when he was talking on, you know, talking smack with Daniel Bryan, that in his career he's never injured anybody and he's never been injured. You know, he works really smart. And again, I think that's what the WWE and what Vince McMahon want out of you as far as what quote unquote good work is. And I think, you know, his wrestling IQ is probably much higher than people give him credit. I think he understands a lot. And when you figure, you know, people talk about, oh yeah, he main evented, you know, he was in the main event of WrestleMania. And then he was, you know, bumped down, you know, rather unceremoniously. And he's sort of floundered ever since then, but he kept his head up, kept moving forward, and he didn't get discouraged. I think there's a lot to be said to that. And what the Miz has done, I think he deserves a lot of credit. As far as Jericho goes, I think that clearly, you know, I wouldn't be surprised that if his WrestleMania match is against Kevin Owens, and that you see him, you know, fight Kevin Owens and be the babyface for WrestleMania season. That wouldn't surprise me at all. But I mean, as far as Jericho goes, we've known that he's, you know, he's really smart and really good for a very long time.
Yes. It seems like the Jericho Owens thing, unless they, you know, circle back and become friends again, which can happen. It seems like it's happening sooner than WrestleMania. Like I'm not sure how they can spread that out long enough with everything that they went through on Monday to either reteam for another couple months before finally breaking up or feuding with other people instead of each other. I was thinking WrestleMania was the pace, and then Monday it seemed to really accelerate. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the best friends gimmick is entertaining, but if the fans are cheering for Jericho against Owens, in a way there's some success there, Jim, because maybe they've turned if the goal is for Kevin Owens to be a top heel for a long stretch of time before turning a babyface, and you could argue that, well, Kevin Owens is miscast, the fans love him, he's got a sharp tongue, but he can use it against heels effectively, and his style is more babyface. You can argue that, but if you concede or stipulate, I guess, to the goal of him being a heel, it sort of worked out that fans are starting to turn against Kevin Owens because Jericho is so endearing and he's been around a long time. And there's something about the way that he acts that, that people have decided to cheer him at Owens' expense. So in that way, it can serve that purpose. I just don't know how they can stretch it out to Mania at this point. They just seem to fast forward through a lot on Monday. Sean, what is your take on the pacing of a Jericho turn or a breakup with Kevin Owens? Probably a better way to put it.
Well, my biggest fear is, like you said, I think they're kind of fast-tracking it now. They're not waiting until WrestleMania, which makes me fear that Roman Reigns will win the title this next pay-per-view so they can do Jericho versus Owens. I'm hoping that's not the case, but that's the way it seems it's heading.
Yeah, if they give Roman Reigns the title and it's not part of a storyline to turn him heel to set up, say, John Cena babyface against Roman Reigns as a heel or something like that at Mania, you know, that it's, I mean, part of it is, yes, we kind of dread it if you think that Roman Reigns is miscast, and I like wrestlers to be cast in the roles that fit them best. And Roman Reigns, despite his proclamation that he's a giggler, you have to go to pwtorch.com to see in the news category to see where that quote came from. Despite that, I don't think that he's going to make a good babyface. I just don't think that's going to happen in the short term. And a heel turn would make sense. So if he wins the title, but it's part of turning him, okay, you know, now we're talking. Now he's getting aligned correctly for 2017, and then you can have a babyface win the Rumble and challenge him at Mania, and we're off to the races, and that's fine. But otherwise, yeah, it's going to be an ugly stretch of time as far as crowd reactions at TV and pay-per-views if that happens. Sean, anything else for us?
No, that's pretty much it. Thanks a lot, guys, for taking my call.
Appreciate it. Absolutely. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Our number is 515-605-9345. As some of you have done, you can email us too if you're listening live, or you can email us even if you're not listening live, but you're probably not listening in time to email us about this show. But you can always email questions for the livecast to pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com, and you can leave it open to which show we get to your question on. I know on Friday's primetime edition of the livecast, they certainly welcome emails too. But the email address is pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com, pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. If you're watching Raw and SmackDown on Monday or Tuesday night and you have a topic you want us to address on the livecast, but you can't listen to the show live right after Raw or SmackDown, you can email us your question during Raw and SmackDown, and we'll try to get to it on the post shows on Monday and Tuesday or here on the midweek edition of the PW Torch livecast. And we'll get to some emails in a moment, but first, Jay from Tampa is up next.
Yeah, no, I was asking about the within the different shows that they have on there, like the Talk and Smack and things like that.
Yeah.
Seems like the more they pull back those things, the more I see the inconsistencies within the booking and things. Kind of like you guys were talking a few moments ago when it comes to like the information, but everybody keeps asking Daniel Bryan about their when do they get a opportunity. When I look at Baron Corbin, it's like seems like he wins a lot lately, but he doesn't get any like title opportunities. But if you have someone lose constantly, then the next SmackDown they'll get an Intercontinental title shot and things like that. So I think it's the more they show stuff like that, the more you start to say, well, what are they fighting for? They keep saying yes to get paid, but the guys on camera, they're asking about opportunities and title shots and things like that. I don't know how they can fix that or if it's even something worth messing with, but it seemed like they're the ones kind of showing that. And my second thing I wanted to get out with was with Sasha Banks. In my opinion, I like her and everything. It's just, to me, she doesn't make a good baby face. I mean, every expression, every comment she makes, just her gimmick alone as a boss, just naturally, nobody likes their boss. Nobody wants to be bossed around. So it's like, I know that was in NXT, she was a heel, but the things that she says as she's kicking you when you're down and she's saying, take that and here, there you go. All that stuff, I look at a heel acting in that kind of way. So I was just wanting to get your comments about that as well.
Absolutely. Good topics, Jay. Thanks. Jim, do you want to start on that?
You know, I understand what he's saying, but I mean, ever since like you know, we had the era of the anti-heel where, you know, Stone Cold said stuff, and, you know, The Rock, I think, is probably the prime example of this. You know, people have, you know, they project themselves into some of these positions, and people want to be able to be that boss and see themselves as the legit boss and have that attitude and that swagger and be able to get away with it. So I think in that regard, she's a baby face. I don't know. I'm not the biggest Sasha Banks fan. I find her to be very inconsistent. I think she looks tremendous. I think, you know, with her gear and everything, and when she walks to the ring, I think she has a tremendous entrance. But once that's over, I find her interviews to be a little inconsistent. I find her ring work to be inconsistent, and I'm not the biggest fan. I think that one of the people that I think has kind of gotten the shaft at all of this is Naomi. You know, she was supposed to be a world champion at WrestleMania, and then she got that injury, and she's never really recovered. Matter of fact, on Twitter, I don't know if you saw this, Wade, but on Twitter, the WWE was congratulating Total Divas for winning some award or some voting category or something. And the Photoshop of all of the cast members, they put in Alicia Fox instead of Naomi.
Yeah, Naomi's had a field day with that. She is upset, and rightfully so, for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No kidding. And I don't know. I think she's very athletic. I think she's had great matches in the past. I like her look. I like the whole neon thing. And I don't know. I personally would rather see them do more with Naomi. That's my opinion.
Yeah. The reason Sasha Banks is miscast as a heel is only because Charlotte is a good heel and she's so much taller. Hopefully if they do the women's tournament on the WWE Network, kind of like the Cruiserweight Classic early this year, they can discover or fall in love with a few new female athletes to deepen the women's roster. I think that now that they've hired Jim more cruiserweights than they initially planned to because of 205 Live, I'm kind of hoping that in 2017 that we see an all-women's show also. And watching how they handle 205 Live and integrate what happens on 205 Live with what happens on Raw, and what happens on Raw leading to things on 205 Live, that'll give them some practice at refining, an opportunity to refine that relationship between a niche show, a specific theme show on the network, and then sprinkling in those wrestlers and that content on Raw to create a synergy. I'd like to see them do that with the women. If WWE can justify the expense of hiring more women to do a weekly women's wrestling show, then that can lead to more rotation among the top talent who appear regularly on Raw. And where that's good is you're not stuck with four women on Raw who are getting a push and four women on SmackDown who are getting a push, and they simply play a cakewalk where the music stops and maybe there's five women and one is on the outskirts and then the two who are closer to each other feud. I mean, it just feels like, it's a little incestuous, I guess, in terms of the same people wrestling each other or stretching feuds out longer than we'd like. I can't imagine if we didn't have a roster split that Kalisto and Baron Corbin would still be wrestling each other, or for that matter, that Miz and Dolph Ziggler would have wrestled each other yet again on Sunday. So I'm hoping for more depth and diversification among the women on the roster, and that can help solve this, because then Sasha Banks can be properly cast as a heel, which I agree with Jay that she's better as a heel. And then you can still have Charlotte as a heel, but you have Naomi and a couple other wrestlers, and Bayley, and then a couple other wrestlers in the pipeline, so to speak, who can rotate feuding with your two top heels, which, again, I think Banks and Charlotte should be. You can also do trades to freshen things up, but you don't want to do it so often that it just really softens the brand split itself. But the key for Sasha, if she turns heel, is to be a heel. And that brings me to another topic that you mentioned on Twitter, Jim, when talking about today's show, which is Alexa Bliss, which I want to get to after the break. But Jay had a question at the top of his call. Jay, if you're still there, remind me of your first topic. If you're still there, you're probably on mute again, Jay. Sorry to throw you off guard.
No, I was just talking about the inconsistencies in the booking.
And it had to do with talking about pay and title shots.
Right.
Okay. Jim, do you want to address that at all?
You know, I think one of the victims of this is Daniel Bryan, because he's got to go on this, talking smack and defend some of these, some of these goofy things. And as good a talker as he is, sometimes it does put him in a weird situation. Baron Corbin has beaten some people, but I don't know that he's beaten, in my mind, even in kayfabe, I don't know that he's beaten anybody that's high enough up the roster that justifies a title shot yet. Beating Kalisto is not really my idea of makes him a heavyweight contender yet. And personally, I think that, for a lot of reasons in non-kayfabe, he's not ready yet, but it's just, I don't know. I mean, this is one of those things that we've complained about for years. We're going to complain about it in 2017, and it's just sort of what Vince McMahon does. Maybe things will change whenever Triple H is finally in charge day-to-day of creative, but for right now, that's just what Vince McMahon does.
To put a little pessimism on that, you can never judge an assistant coach and how they're going to run a team entirely and how they act when they're assistant coach. Because when you're an assistant coach, your job isn't to forward your own philosophy on what the strategy should be and what kind of players you want on your team. Your job is to serve the head coach. And with Triple H, he's a mix of an assistant coach overall in terms of the broad product of WWE as a brand. But he does get to show some aspects that are less hands-on by Vince McMahon, like with NXT. There's good signs within NXT, but some mixed signals in terms of social media consistency with Triple H, or being a heel on Raw, but being a babyface commissioner of sorts or father figure on NXT. That's more circumstantial. Triple H is being the character maybe he wants to be on NXT that serves NXT, but Vince McMahon calls him up every once in a while to be the nasty authority heel that we're supposed to dislike. But even on social media, Triple H, there are times where he's breaking kayfabe, so to speak, in a completely needless way. Even congratulating Robert Roode on a great entrance, that entrance was great. It's like, I mean, I guess that's not a huge thing, but I just would think it'd be better for Triple H as a character, as the father figure of NXT, to be more in line with William Regal and decrying heel tactics, or taking a dig at a heel for maybe being too full of himself. And Triple H can be the fatherly figure who has matured out of that. But he can't do that if at the same time he's still playing this authority figure on Raw. So he's in a tough situation. I hope, I shouldn't say I hope, who knows at what point Triple H will take over, but I do hope when he does, if that does indeed happen, I won't say it's inevitable, but likely, that he'll clean some of this up. I'm more optimistic that there will be change, not necessarily in 2017. It just, there's so many new things being thrown at Vince McMahon in terms of how to reach his fans, and a different fan base that has grown up with full access to the internet and a style and approach to wrestling that is so different than what you and I, Jim, watched make money for promoters for decades, leading up to a lot of changes in the internet era, the Monday Night War era, the Attitude era, and the post-ECW era, or the ECW and on era too. There's just so many rules and conventions that were shattered, and a lot of money was made, but I would still continue to argue some of the changes that were made in the late 90s through the mid-2000s have more negative ramifications and more lessons that should be learned on what to change now than trying to repeat them. I think that they got away in that Monday Night War era and Attitude era with breaking a lot of rules due to circumstances that are less forgiving today. And that even goes back to the A topic at the beginning of the show. Anyway, I'm very late for the bottom of the hour break, so let's go to the bottom of the hour break. And when we come back, we will continue our conversation. I have Alexa Bliss as an example that maybe Sasha Banks can follow in terms of being a more believable heel if Sasha is to turn heel again. So we'll talk about Alexa Bliss and her good week right after this break. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the livecast. Thank you. Welcome back to the PW Torch livecast. I'm Wade Keller, editor of pwtorch.com and mmatorch.com. UFC 206 coming up this weekend. A lot to talk about in the lead up to that show, and more follow-up on what occurred last Wednesday, the announcement of the initiation of the MMA Athletes Association, an attempt to corner and leverage UFC management into sitting down with fighters for collective bargaining to get better treatment, better pay, retro pay for past athletes, and setting up current athletes from the bottom of the card to the top with a safety net, better medical coverage, and pension. I'm very interested to see where that story continues to go, and you can follow along on that, along with the latest on everything going on in the world of mixed martial arts with Bellator and UFC, including live fight coverage on weekends and roundtable reviews on big topics in the world of mixed martial arts at MMATorch.com. Multiple articles every single day, a daily news digest, so you can catch up on the biggest news of the day and some notebook items in one article. Check that out. The current roundtable that we've got going on right now is, what change do you hope Mick Maynard brings to UFC's matchmaking now that he's been hired to replace Joe Silva? We got the second installment of that up right now, plus a 5 years ago flashback to this week when George St. Pierre suffered a big knee injury, a massive blow to USC, leading to the Diaz Condit matchup, which, as Jamie Pennick wrote 5 years ago, was a silver lining to GSP's injury. A lot of good stuff over at MMATorch.com. So check it out. It should be part of your daily reading if you are an MMA fan, along with, of course, PWTorch.com. Jim, I noticed that you mentioned in Twitter, and plugging this show, you mentioned Alexa Bliss. I want to find out why you did. Obviously, she won the women's championship, so she's in the news. But wow, I just think she has been tremendous, eye-openingly tremendous over the past week or so as a character. Your thoughts on the job that Becky has done, and if she's really risen to the occasion the last couple of weeks like I think she has. Oh, and I'm going to turn on your microphone again. I'm going to find myself $500 for that one. All right, there you go. There you go, Jim.
Some people are better contenders than they are champions. You know, someone seems like a really strong contender. They're on fire and they're doing well, and it looks like, you know, they're going to be an amazing champion, and they lose something once they hold the title. And she has been the exact opposite. I think she's been a great champion. She's holding the belt with that championship aura. Her interviews have been stronger, and I think that she's been a surprise. I think there's more to Alexa Bliss than we had realized. And I agree with you. I've been really impressed with her. The one thing I will say, though, is I don't know what's going on with WWE this week, as far as, you know, dropping the B word and that ridiculous thing in the hotel room. I'm just like, what are the, you know, either make up your mind. You can't be family friendly and then occasionally edgy. You've got to do one or the other. And I just think it's a bad idea. I think the money side, regardless of what some people may think, is in sponsorships and keeping things, you know, on the family friendly side, is particularly in the climate we find ourselves in today. But I don't know what they're thinking and what road they're going down and how some of these things got past creative and onto television. I find it very puzzling.
Jim, on that note, what do you think they are doing? I mean, like, is this an attempt to boost ratings? And they sat down with a brainstorming session and they said the two things we need to do is reenact the Lita Edge Rated R Superstar segment along with the Brian Pillman Steve Austin gun incident 20 years ago. We just had the 20th anniversary of that. We need to reenact that. We need some skits outside of the realm of the arena along with more sexual content, but we'll put it in the third hour and we'll ignore the fact that there's a lot of moms and dads and grandmas and aunts and uncles who brought a bunch of adolescent kids who wanted to cheer on Bailey and Dean Ambrose and whomever, and we're going to have them sit through this very awkward video skit where a woman tells a man to take off his pants in a hotel room and having to explain this to kids. It did feel to me, I mean, you can have both in wrestling, but I'm not sure that both should be on the same show, that where you're overtly appealing to kids with Bailey Bears, but you're also creating this seductive scene in a hotel room where a man is stripped down to his underwear as Lana is tricking him into a bad situation, we'll say.
You know, I would go farther back. This reminded me of some of the ridiculous NWA, Jim Crockett, and WCW sketches. This reminded me of Rick Steiner going out on a date with Robin Green, Nancy Benoit. And it also reminded me of the infamous Ric Flair, J.J. Dillon with the Precious date, where it turns out to be Ronnie Garvin in drag. And I guess I've come to accept that wrestling is the way it is now, and there's backstage cameras, and wrestling is a soap opera, and that's just the way it is. But I really had a hard time. The whole thing took me out of the moment. Going to the hotel room and with the camera there and everything, and I just found it to be stupid. It reminded me of Al Snow and Big Boss Man with Pepper. It reminded me of Rick Steiner and Precious, and Rick Steiner and Robin Green, and it reminded me of the whole Precious thing. It was just dumb, and also I don't see that Enzo Amore would be a character that would fall for that. You know, he's the certified G. He plays women. Women don't play him. And I don't know. I just found the whole thing just a huge, huge fail.
And not to endorse the skit and ignore what I said about the contradiction between a show that's overtly trying to appeal to kids or doing all these crowd shots now showing kids engaged in the product and then that kind of skit. And you might be able to argue, well, it's a violent show. Kids shouldn't be there anyway. And if kids are there, the violence is much worse than, you know, introducing them to the concept that a man is attracted to a woman and they might go into a hotel room and declothe. And I get that too. What I would like as a side item is a context to why a camera was there. And I don't want to just give up on that and give them a free pass because they've been so sloppy with it for years that we should just accept that sloppiness is now policy. Because, and I told this story earlier this week, but J.J. Dillon at the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame in Waterloo, Iowa, it always tells the story. The last 2 years, he's told the story. He talked to Bruce Mitchell and I in the hotel, Bruce Mitchell and me in the hotel lobby last year when we first arrived. And we were talking about that Four Horsemen skit and lamenting this kind of same thing where J.J. explained how meticulous they were with the Dusty Rhodes beatdown by the Four Horsemen off-site, out of the arena, and how they went into such they took such care and such detail on JJ explaining why there was a cameraman there and explaining I paid you to film this and explaining why he wanted video footage of their deed. There was a reason for it all, and they could have done the same thing if people in WWE were students of history. And of course they have to philosophically agree with what I think is obvious, which it's better to explain why cameras are there than not. It doesn't have to be a 10 out of 10 in terms of changing your business to be worth fixing. So I don't like the argument that, well, it's no big deal. It doesn't really hurt anything. So therefore, who cares? That's not good enough because it's more than a straighten your tie moment. You know, the straighten your tie moment is, yes, you can go about your day with a crooked tie, but why not make a little effort to straighten it? Your day might be a little better. People might not be staring right under your, you know, right at your tie knot going, why doesn't that guy straighten his tie? It's not the end of the world, but it's better to straighten your tie if you notice it in the mirror. That's what I argue about this stuff. So why not have Lana look into the camera, before Enzo arrives and go, I want you to film all of this because I want, and of course she'd be playing into the con, I want Rusev to see what's happening in here and become jealous and learn to appreciate me. That's all she has to do. She hired a cameraman to be there. She acknowledges the camera is there, so it doesn't seem kind of creepy that there's a camera in the hallway and in her hotel room that both Enzo and Lana ignore, which doesn't fit the structure of the show. And then Enzo knocks on the door, and Lana opens the door, and Enzo looks at the camera and goes, whoa, what's with that? And she goes, well, remember, you're here to make Rusev jealous. We need footage. But don't worry. When things get steamy, I'll send him out of the room. That's all they had to do, and everything is taken care of, and now people aren't distracted by the notion of why is a camera there or disconnected because it feels like a sitcom. And so the answers to these problems are so simple. And there are historical examples of it working. And there is a reason that in history, pro wrestling worked hard to explain why a camera would be present in a situation where it normally didn't exist. It actually makes for a more immersive viewing experience. This was a perfect opportunity for it. And they blew it, Jim. They blew it. They had that chance. I don't want to overtalk that point because we do have some emails I also want to get to. And feel free to give us a call, too, 515-605-9345. We'll try to get to you in the remaining moments of the show. But Jim, any follow-up on that before I move to an email topic?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've talked about it on Saturday Morning Wrestling, how, you know, that date with Rick Steiner and Robin Green is one of my least favorite things ever in wrestling. And this whole thing with Enzo Amore and Lana and stuff is right up there as far as some of my least favorite things. I didn't like it on any level.
We did run a poll on pwtorch.com asking PW Torch visitors what they thought of the skid. I don't know if you saw the results, Jim, but I wouldn't say it's decisive, but it's telling. 35% got 879 votes in, and the poll's still open, so you can go to pwtorch.com and let your voice be heard. 35% hated it. Now, we gave five options. Loved it, liked it, mixed feelings, didn't like it or hated it. Out of five options, more than a third chose hated it. I don't care what, and I'll get to the other results in a moment, but I don't care how many people liked it or loved it. If you have over a third of your audience hating something you do, that means something's wrong with it. That means you did something that maybe you ought not do. I do not, as a businessman, think, well, I'm going to do this because a percentage of people will like it, but more than a third of my customers will hate it. I just don't do that. That's just bad business. I don't think there's anything that would get more than one third to say they hated it. Now, disliked or mixed feelings, hey, you're going to have to live with that in wrestling. There's a lot of things on a wrestling show. So I think those results are telling. I think PWTorch.com visitors are the core demographic of who WWE is going after with WWE Network and trying to sell WrestleMania travel packages, the hardcore fan. I think that's a bad sign. But on top of that, 20% didn't like it. So we're up to 55% thumbs down. 16% have mixed feelings. So now you're over 70% have some negative feelings, and half of them very negative feelings. Only 17% liked it and 12% loved it. So mixed results, but I would say anything that gets 35% hate, Jim, is something you ought to reevaluate. I think part of why they hated it is it didn't make any sense. Why is there a camera in the hallway? Why is there a camera in a hotel room? Why are they ignoring it? Part of it was it felt predictable. People kind of saw what was coming. Although that's not the definition of a bad angle. It's the definition of maybe a bad idea if the babyface is the sucker. If the fans are on to catch on to a scam before the babyface does, that's kind of bad. That Bruce Mitchell always talks about that with Sting. You know, Sting was the biggest sucker in the 90s, because he would continue to get sucked into the Horsemen and Ric Flair and then get turned on. I don't think it's good for the wrestlers who are positioned to be cheered and admired and looked up to by fans to be, you know, the dumbest people in the room. That said, I guess some people would say you can forgive a guy for doing dumb things if Lana's showing her leg and seducing him with sexting and that kind of thing. So anyway, all right, moving on. I want to change topics to Chris from Ann Arbor. He says, he just emailed this in during the show, Jim. Maybe TNA was doing the right thing by keeping TJ Perkins under a mask and not allowing him to speak. your thoughts on that. And number two, I've been a big fan of Jack Gallagher since the CWC and loved the way he was presented in the video package last week. That's how a fighter should act and speak. Let us all hope his character doesn't turn into a joke. Jim, your thoughts on the job TJ Perkins has done. I will say, in full disclosure, I've not heard his color commentary yet on last night's CWC main event, or I'm sorry, 205 Live main event, because I was hosting the live cast. I have not gone back and listened to the show, even though I kept a pretty close eye on it during the SmackDown post-show last night. But TJ Perkins, was he a mistake, Jim, as Todd Martin has asserted, to make the centerpiece babyface of the cruiserweight division out of the gate, because there is a blandness that some people argue he has as his main trait?
Yeah, I saw him last night. You know, I liked his vest and tie that he wore. I thought he looked pretty sharp, but you know, I saw his color commentary is very unremarkable. You know, as far as it was a mistake, I mean, they didn't have a lot of other people signed. He really was kind of, you know, the best option that they had. I mean, he's fine. I don't think he's money or anything like that. But I mean, clearly, I think that he's moving back down to his role as role player. I like the new Rich Swann. I think he's kind of fun. I'd like to see kind of a change in his look and his gear if he's going to be this singing and dancing and this, you know, this wacky baby face. That would be fine. As far as Jack Gallagher, you know, he's really kind of shined under the WWE spotlight, and it's really a shame that he's a cruiserweight, because I think you could do something with him as far as make him just an entertaining middle of the card guy who is really good at being serious, but then also, you know, mixing in a little bit of comedy in his match without being a strictly comedic character. Yeah, I think he's done really, really well, and it's too bad he doesn't have a little bit more size, because he could probably be a successful mid-card guy in WWE.
And I'm a little heartbroken by your phrasing that it's too bad he's a cruiserweight, as if that puts a cap on the ability for somebody's talents to shine. But I think it is reflective of almost the defeatist attitude that some fans have, that the cruiserweight division won't be a place that wrestlers want to be and will make good money and can have a thriving career. Because to me, having 205 Live and being featured on Raw should be, as a cruiserweight, should be as much of an opportunity to make money shine and have a great career as being the size of Miz and hosting Miz TV. I'm hoping that it won't be a shame that anybody's a cruiserweight, but instead in 6 months, we'll look at being in the cruiserweight division as an equal opportunity as being in the tag division, or more so the women's division, or just as much so the main mix with Kevin Owens or AJ Styles or Dean Ambrose or Roman Reigns. I'm hoping WWE doesn't continue to, and maybe that's unfair to say they're even doing it right now, because they're not overtly, but I hope that in the long run and relatively short run, being in the cruiserweight division isn't seen as a consolation prize or a punishment for not being tall, but this great opportunity, just as being a featherweight or a lightweight, isn't seen as any kind of a handicap or low ceiling on success in UFC compared to a light heavyweight or a heavyweight. Jim, is there hope for that?
I guess because you're on TV, there's always a chance, and things can happen. I mean, we've seen, you know, unlikely body types like Kevin Owens succeed. So, I mean, anything is possible in the WWE, but, you know, if someone like Rey Mysterio, who's as talented as anybody was, you know, had challenges getting over, and, you know, they really could have capitalized much more on him, you know, I don't know what hope that Jack Gallagher has.
And is it because cruiserweights can't make money, Jim, or WWE won't frame them and present them in a way for them to make main event money?
Second, the latter.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah, that's what I'm clarifying. Because I like Noam Dar on 205 Live last night saying, I'm 23 years old and I just signed a big money contract. The world, you know, is mine. That, more of that. I was so encouraged by a cruiserweight wrestler saying something other than, thank you, Triple, and I know I harp on this a lot, and it was only part of the introductory of the Cruiserweight Classic, but I would still say there's undercurrents woven into the division, which, you know, with the Brian Kendrick character too, or TJ Perkins coming from nothing, and now look at him. I want some of the cruiserweights to have swagger. I want some of them to talk about, like Noam Dar did, I'm 23 years old and I just signed a big money contract. More of that. More Twitter feed. I mean, if you look at Conor McGregor's Twitter feed, there is nothing that defines, like, Alexa Bliss is a heel. But if you look at her Twitter feed, it's showing off art that her fans draw of her and thanking them for it. Conor McGregor, as a heel, is showing off $123,000 car that he just bought, strutting down the street with two title belts over his shoulder, acting cocky, being at the coolest clubs, hanging out with celebrities. He uses Twitter to build his image. And I would like to see wrestlers utilize Twitter to do what Vince McMahon has always said, which is amplify a believable core true aspect of their personality that WWE is exploiting and amplifying in order to make money. And Twitter is an opportunity to do more of that. And I, you know, we talked about Alexa Bliss being a good heel character on TV. She talked about, you can say whatever you want on social media, I don't care. I want her to get into Twitter wars with WWE fans, fans of Becky Lynch. Enhance her character through Twitter so that when people show up at the building, they're mad at her for something she said on Twitter, and they're booing her because they're one of the people who saw on Twitter that Alexa Bliss was being a heel. And that's something, that's a synergy that not many people have caught on to yet. Conor McGregor gets it. Noam Dar showed a sign of that last night on 205 Live by hyping up this notion that everybody in the cruiserweight division should do, that they are superstars. They're just not tall. But that's irrelevant. Conor McGregor never talks about being a smaller guy, making it in a big man's business. He is the business. He is the biggest star. Same with Ronda Rousey, and in a different way, because she's not as into marketing herself as Conor. But more of that. I also like that Austin Aries is doing color commentary on 205 Live, because Austin Aries has that swagger. Aries has carried himself without apology throughout his entire career. He walks around like he's 6'7". And just as Conor McGregor does, Austin Aries gets it, that you need to project yourself 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, in every public opportunity you have as a megastar. And if you're a heel, come across as if you don't have the time of day for fans. And if they create art of you, you tell them, keep working at it. Maybe someday you'll be good enough to be on my Twitter feed, but I'm not retweeting you until you're better. You know, that's how you build a character. That's how you get heat at the buildings. More of that. There's plenty of baby faces to promote the goodwill of the WWE brand, but the heels shouldn't be in charge of that. Jack Gallagher, we got another email from Damon from Jacksonville, Jim. He says, I wanted to get your opinion on the Raw debut of Jack Gallagher. This past Monday, I watched Raw with my father, who is 70 years old, and by all accounts, a casual fan. When Jack Gallagher popped on the TV, my father scoffed at his tights and his size and how pale he was. And then the bell rang. Gallagher's personality and charisma won him over. He was drawn in by the character. His moveset only added to the enjoyment. When the three count happened, my father literally popped in his chair with a thumbs up. What are your thoughts on his presentation on Raw? Jim, you already talked about it a bit, but what I like about Gallagher is it plays into something that I have preached going back to every incarnation of a cruiserweight or light heavyweight division, which in the X division in TNA. It should not just be about athletes doing high-flying moves because they're little. It's so spectacular. You know, no limits. It's crazy. Look at all these flying moves. It shouldn't be the spot monkey division. You want diversity. When people talk about the great cruiserweight division matches on Nitro in WCW, they almost always cite Dean Malenko, who was not doing top rope flips. He was a technician with 1,001 holds. And Jack Gallagher is part of that diversity of the division that I think is the key to the division getting over, is don't define it as just the spot monkey division where you get to see a lot of little guys do flippy-doos, as it's been demeaningly talked about by people looking down at the cruiserweights over the years. Gallagher is a good step in that direction also, Jim, that he is different. He offers diversity to the division because not everybody just wants to watch a bunch of guys running and flipping. They actually want to see a variety of styles and holds. It's one of the attractions from the early days of MMA. Oh, how will a grappler do against a taekwondo artist? How will someone in judo do against a kickboxer? And I like the establishing not only that Gallagher has a personality that stands out, but a in-ring style that genuinely is different and is a counter to what some of the other cruiserweights do with their high-flying moves.
I would argue that lately with this whole 205 experiment, that ever since the Cruiserweight Classic, there hasn't been enough high flying in the cruiserweight division. And also, I think that there haven't been enough flippy doos in my opinion. And I think you do need a fairly spectacular style for this division to be successful. Also, you know, the other thing that's kind of bugging me is one thing about Jack Gallagher is like, he kind of looks a little too much like the Vaudevillians. And I'm like, do we really need another hipster wrestler? So I'd like to see either the Vaudevillians change their look or Jack changes look or something. And speaking of that, with the debut vignette of Mustafa Ali, I'm like, hey, great. We've got another angry Middle Eastern wrestler. It's like, we already have Arya Daivari, and now we have someone who's from Pakistan who's, you know, complaining about the way the fans treat him. And I'm just like, do we need another character like this? You know, you just need one of literally like every personality type or every gimmick type. And it just seems, I don't know, they need to take someone in a new direction in that regard, in my opinion.
We want some diversity to the characters, but it'd be nice in 2016, as much as we can learn from history in the wrestling industry and what worked, to maybe not go back to some old outdated tropes that maybe, appropriate for kids to be watching, you know, just playing into those old stereotypes. All right, let's go to area code 617. Thanks for holding. Thanks for calling. Please state your name and the city you're calling from. 617. 617, we can't hear you. Oh, no. Yep. Can you, you sound a little distant. Are you on speakerphone? Can you talk a little louder?
Hi, Wade.
Hey, how you doing? What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, I'm Anthony from Boston. How are you today?
Doing great. Thanks for calling. What have you got for Jim and me?
Back to the earlier conversation about the stuff with Enzo and Lana, as garbage as it is. At this point with the network, would it make any sense for them to do a more adult-themed show, isolate some guys, and just do like a late, quote-unquote, late-night wrestling show and air it, you know, at 1 a.m. or something like that? You know, like the cruiserweights are separate. The women maybe are separate. Maybe you do, you know, something that's more of an adult themed show.
You know, I wrote last week in my cover story in the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, which is a VIP exclusive available in PDF format or all text format. Sign up at pwtorch.com/govip. My cover story was talking about that diversity and the niche promoting of wrestling now and the opportunity that WWE Network provides because people can kind of pick and choose what they watch and they don't need the really large audience to justify promoting the style. The headline in the newsletter is WWE continues to diversify and serve niches. Subheadline: WWE Network puts end to one-size-fits-all approach. So, Anthony, what you're speaking of is something I wrote about. I didn't bring up having a edgier, R-rated show. And I would say, before I throw to you, Jim, on this, the risk is if you have a show that reflects a more adult theme, there has to be some sort of explanation why that's happening. Like, because I don't think you want to advertise on Raw, hey, we're a PG show, but if you really want to see what you're looking for, tune in at midnight tonight when the wrestlers really will entertain you with this edgy, hardcore product. Like, there needs to be some sort of reason that the show would be more hardcore or edgier. And I don't know that you want to draw attention to the notion that Raw and SmackDown have these really strict standards. And now there's a show where we loosen those standards and let wrestlers really go at it. So I have a little bit of a problem with how they could advertise it without diminishing or drawing attention to the limitations of the main product. And then also just, you know, I want there to be a reason there's a camera in a hotel room and I want them to explain it. Why would this show end up being more hardcore? What would be the reason that would occur organically based on, you know, wrestlers coming out there? Like, is it just, well, we're allowed to say naughty words, or women are allowed to dress more scantily clad? Like, what would the actual explanation be why this show ends up being more themed? Jim, your thoughts on that approach, which I think has some promise, but also, as I said, I have some concerns about how they would frame it and launch it and advertise it.
So, I mean, yeah, what exactly would this entail is my first question. Are we talking about swearing? Are we talking about use of weapons? Are we talking about blood? Are we talking about, you know, what exactly are we talking about? I mean, I don't know. I personally see it to be counterproductive, and I think it would confuse the audience. I mean, for years, you know, a long time now, we've been trying to get away from some of the problems, you know, and the burnout that the Attitude Era caused and ECW caused and things. And I think that, you know, you're trying to retrain an audience to, you know, retrain the audience's expectations. And I think that you kind of undo all of that work by doing something like that.
Let me go back to Anthony. Just see if you're still there, Anthony, if you have any more, if you have some specific ideas addressing some of the concerns or questions Jim and I had.
As you were talking, I was kind of kicking around some ideas. And the thing that jumps out to me, if you're going to do something from a narrative standpoint,
yeah.
This idea of doing something like WWE quote unquote cage fight, and maybe trying to kick off feuds and stuff on a show like that, make it, I wouldn't go so far as to say hardcore, and I certainly don't expect that there to ever be blood, you know, on a B show on the network or anything like that. But, you know, maybe something that's slightly more UFC styled, where you're giving people an opportunity or something, like number one contenders matches or something like that. And I feel like this is something that you should do. If they would do something like this, they should do it at Full Sail. And, you know, have a captive audience that would be really excited. So I guess it's capturing the feel of ECW without being totally over the top, as ECW obviously is. And I know that, you know, doing a cage match to start a feud is, you know, antithetical to a blow-off. But, I mean, they don't do blow-offs right anyway. So what difference does it make?
Yeah, interesting. It's funny because it was 20 years ago that WWE had this idea. Before they felt entirely comfortable going all in with the Attitude Era, but seeing what was happening with ECW, they decided, Vince McMahon had this idea to do a weekly pay-per-view on Saturday nights called Shotgun Saturday Night. And
oh, yeah.
The initial idea was, you know, we're going to have a late-night show where we loosen the rules even more. And have a nightclub atmosphere. Vince wanted to film it live Saturday night in a nightclub in the Northeast, not necessarily always with the full roster or his biggest stars, but, you know, the idea was we're going to brand this as an edgier product. Here's a quote from the latest back issue of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter that just went up. This is issue number 419, dated December 14th, 1996, which was just posted in PDF and Ultimate format for VIP members last Saturday morning, when we always post our 20 years ago back issues. Now, here's a notebook item. The WWF finally officially announced the launch of Shotgun Saturday Night, a weekly live one-hour show that will be carried on between 12 and 20 stations around the country. A meeting was held with staffers at Titan Towers on Friday. The show is being described as, quote, cutting edge with a significant amount of, quote, entertainment content, a bit more adult-oriented than other WWF programming, although they won't go so far that it would be inappropriate for kids. Well, good luck with that. The show will emanate from various nightclubs and landmarks in the New York area. The goal, apparently, will be to integrate the atmosphere of New York on the show. The initial lineup of stations is said to be around 15 to 20, with hopes of expanding that over the next several months. With only two stations rumored thus far, are their Fox affiliates in New York and Detroit, but those aren't even close to confirmed, and WWE is not confirming stations yet. So this is an idea that's been batted around for a while. Let's split off something that'll be more niche oriented, more late night oriented, and it's something Vince has thought of before. So given that, you know, 20 years, and by the way, that's a good example of cool stuff that you can, when you're a VIP member and you read old back issues of the Torch from the 90s, that you end up just knowing more than the average fan does about, you know, cool stuff that kind of isn't part of the official WWE history books that they advertise all the time on their documentaries and stuff. And so I bring that up, Anthony, to show that this is the way Vince McMahon has thought in the past, and it wouldn't surprise me to see him as they go more with niche programming and diversity on the network, to have something along the lines of Shotgun Saturday Night, you know, that in one way or another plays to what you're saying, something that appeals more to fans who feel a little constrained by the primetime USA network standards.
So I think they could have a lot more success with it too, considering there's no ECW for people to compare it to.
Oh, right. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, so. the Full Sail is one setting, but man, if they had shows that look more like, you know, Evolve, you know, where you see the bartender serving drinks in the background and wrestlers are hitting their head on the ceiling. I don't know if WWE wants their superstars to be in that atmosphere, but if they created a niche product with wrestlers who maybe didn't quite fit the aesthetic of the main show, but were part of this almost a Lucha Underground subculture of wrestling.
Yeah.
There might be some potential in that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of the angle that I'm talking about. And something that's like Lucha Underground, a tighter narrative where you bring people in, you have specific places that you want to get, you record all the shows in advance because whatever, spoilers, so what? You know, I wouldn't encourage putting any high-level main roster guys on a show like this. I think this is something that can help get over lower-card and mid-card guys and at least give them a little bit of heat coming back onto the main roster.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool, Anthony. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
You bet. Call again. All right, Jim, let's take an email before wrapping up the show here and go to North Lancashire, Scotland. Email all the way from there, from Barry. He goes, now that New Day are on the verge of a heel turn, maybe, maybe not, how do you suggest they do it? Do they break Demolition's record and become so over the top with the bragging it turns them heel? Or do they fall short of the record on Monday and the rage becomes too much for them and they become that badass heel team that we saw for 1 week 2 years ago when they destroyed John Cena? Jim, your thoughts on what's going on with New Day and Barry's specific topic?
I think that they have to break the record. I think that they've drugged this out far enough for them not to fall short and everything. And besides, you know, the guy who holds the record, Bill Eady of Demolition, is suing the company, and they would much rather promote the record holder as being in good graces with the company than not. So I think that them breaking the record is a given. I mean, look at how much traction CM Punk got out of that when he just held it for a year or however many days that was. So I think they're definitely going to break the record. As far as, you know, how they turn heel, I think bragging would be one way to do it. I was thinking maybe they couldn't do anything with American Alpha because they're on SmackDown. So never mind.
Yeah. I'm curious. I'm intrigued by what's going on with New Day lately. I would like for them to get more of an edge. I think they're fluffy. Everything is, I mean, they're, you know, Rich Swann is doing what New Day were trying to do at the beginning, but in a way that I think is a little more palatable for the WWE audience. I could do without Michael Cole exclaiming when Rich Swann is about to come out going, is everybody ready for some fun? It's like, come on. I mean, that's just classic Vince McMahon just being undercutting the wrestler. Let Rich Swann do what, you know, Iceman King Parsons did in World Class, coming out to We Are Family or Junkyard Dog, coming out to Another One Bites the Dust. And I don't mean to just compare Rich Swann to other black wrestlers who have succeeded, but clearly his character is inspired by or a continuation of that the dancing, upbeat character that those guys portrayed. I would say Iceman Parsons even more. I think he owes him some commission or some royalty checks for his gimmick. But he's doing it more successfully, I would say, than New Day did at the beginning when the fans completely rejected them, because there's no good idea that Vince McMahon can't add a little too much syrup to ruin. And the New Day worked, ironically, for quite a while. But I do sense, and I don't know if it's intentional on New Day's part or not, Jim, that fans are starting to kind of roll their eyes a little bit at certain aspects of what they're doing. And now it seems like New Day is feeding into it. I don't even know if New Day are of the school of thought that there's heels and baby faces and that your goal should be to either aim towards fans cheering you or try to sway fans to boo you. I don't know that they're of that school. I don't consider it a debatable topic. I think it's indisputably better to aim your character in a way that either is seeking cheers or boos exclusively, not a mix. Shades of gray leads to apathy, not passion. But I don't know that they're even of the school of thought as, you know, as wrestlers and as people who think, you know, what are we doing out here other than we're here to entertain and to sports entertain people with you know, our zaniness and wackiness and pop culture references. So I'm hesitant to read too much into what they're doing as being part of a strategy, but it does seem like they are headed towards a heel turn in how in tweaking how they're acting. I hope that's true. And I hope that it leads to them having, you know, more of an edge again. But you do run the risk, Jim, of people just not really believing anything all that passionately about them, love or hate, because they're just all over the board. You know, that we don't really know at the core what defines them, because they went from oblivious, rejected baby faces to obnoxious, ironic heels to lovable, obnoxious, ironic heels or baby faces, and now maybe heel again. So I'm not quite sure where they're going. And whether it's going to work or not.
I would like to see them, I don't know, have some good matches and some entertaining feuds. I mean, when people look back on this record-breaking title reign, people are just going to say, well, they had some fun merchandise and they had some entertaining skits and they did some creative things with cereal and with a trombone and things. But, I mean, there are no classic New Day matches. There's no classic New Day opponent. There's no classic New Day feud. This has just sort of been something that has gone by because the skits were entertaining at times. And I think this formula is starting to get long in the tooth. And I think that's one of the key reasons why that they're turning, is because it's just not new and entertaining anymore. It's kind of predictable and old, and it's not that funny anymore.
All right, I want to sneak in one more email question, Jim, then we'll wrap up today's program. John M. from Ripon, California says, it seems WWE has once again gone away from squash matches, and I had an idea of how to use them here and there. Why not take some of the wrestlers who never win and let them win a squash match every now and then? There's a handful of guys who never win, ever. I think if they won a squash match every now and then, it may help when they come out on TV seem important rather than just me wanting to change the channel, fast forward, or not pay attention. I think it helps to make it seem like all of your wrestlers are good and can win matches. I thought one of the only good things they've done with Bayley is when she won squash matches right after she lost the triple threat match. I think it helped her bounce back and seem important. Those are my thoughts. Jim, yeah, I mean, I know you and I have gone a little bit back and forth on squash matches before. I like the idea of having a hierarchy of wrestlers where you give an opportunity to somebody who's losing a little too often a chance to show their moveset and shine. And I don't think people turn the channel if they look at a match and go, I think somebody who I like to see wrestle is going to win, and they're going to win quickly, and they're going to do their cool moves that I like. And I think Dolph Ziggler right now is a great example of somebody who would benefit from what John is saying Bayley did. He lost to Miz. He takes a week or two off, comes back, and his next match on SmackDown is against, you know, Jack Swagger, and he gets a decisive win, or somebody along those lines. And he gets two or three wins, and the announcers can start talking about what's next for him. And he seems to be, you know, absorbing the loss of the feud with Miz and coming at it with a new strategy, a guy who's on a losing streak, adjusting his game plan and having a winning streak. And I think that's a sports story that you can tell with 2-minute squash matches that are all about signature moves and ring entrances and announcers reframing or building up a wrestler. And then next time Ziggler loses, it'll mean more because he actually had a string of wins. So I like John's idea here, Jim. Is that something they could do more of and not just use squash matches to introduce new characters like Nia Jax and what they did with her or Braun Strowman?
Well, I think if you do it judiciously, yeah, but I wouldn't do it all of the time or every week because people are going to see a pattern and they're going to tune out. I think if it has a purpose and is part of a storyline, then sure. But I, like I said, I think if it's done judiciously, then it could be successful, but I wouldn't do it every week.
Yeah. And I would do it every week because I don't think people will tune out, because I don't think people are tuning in because they want to see 50-50 matches between people who just traded wins and losses. I think people tune in because they want to see ring entrances, characters they like, and cool moves. And if you have a match that looks like it's going to be a squash, I would argue people are more likely to watch because they're not settling in for a 12-minute match with a commercial in the middle with an outcome that will be forgotten next week. They're going to actually see something that matters, and that's shorter, and that's to the point, and that's punctuated with cool signature spots and no ambiguity over which wrestler is the spotlight is shining on. I think you should have 2-3 squash matches on every Raw and 1 or 2 on every SmackDown, and it alleviates the overexposure then that you have of some of your name brand stars And it goes maybe full circle almost an hour and a half ago to the original point, which is you if you're doing those squash matches and they're quick, you get in, you get out. It's about the ring entrance, some cool moves, framing that wrestler. And now it's on to the next segment. I think people are more likely to stick around than when two guys come out. They don't care that much about Hype Bros and the Ascension. And they're like, oh, God, I don't even care who wins. And this could go on for 10 minutes. I'm going to flip the channel. And then what you end up with is maybe James Ellsworth can sell what happened last week on SmackDown for 2 weeks because you don't need him because every segment is filled with pay-per-view quality, even Steven matchups.
Yeah, makes sense to me.
Cool. All right. Well, if I persuaded you a little, I feel good about the show. That's my case for more of them. Jim, thanks so much. Great talking to you again. You never know where the show's going to take us with the emails and the callers and the topics, but I think we had some really good contributions from callers and emailers today, and definitely you too. So we look forward to your show on Saturday morning, 11:30 Eastern. Of course, it's available on demand, and people who want to catch up on some shows they might have missed with past guests, because one of the things that is great about Saturday morning wrestling is you get to hear from people who were part of different eras in wrestling, talk about what worked, and as you said, what was fun, but also maybe some forgotten approaches to promoting and booking that worked and are timeless and would work again. But other times it's just about, you know, reminiscing about some fun nostalgic memories. And Dave Sullivan will probably be a heavy dose of that on Saturday. So we look forward to that. But people can catch up on your old shows at pwtorchlivecast.com. Just choose the on-demand category, the latest on-demand category from our menu right under our logo, and choose Saturday Morning Wrestling. And you can run through a year's worth of Saturday Morning Wrestling shows and see if any of those guests pop up. And you will become a smarter wrestling fan as a result of it. Right, Jim?
I would hope so. Yeah, and you'll also be entertained. You'll hear some great stories, like, for example, Queen Kong tells a story about how when she met, she had a meeting with Fabulous Moolah in Vegas, and some inappropriate things happened. So there you go.
Good teaser. All right. Thanks, Jim. I'll be by tomorrow with Interview Thursday, and then Friday, Bruce Mitchell and Travis Bryant take over on Primetime Friday. If you're in the mood for more live cast, though, you can start with any number of recent shows, including last Thursday, ex-creative team member Matt McCarthy was my guest, and we talked about current WWE storylines, some interesting comments about the WWE strange policy of having wrestlers do jobs and be humiliated in their hometowns. He talked about whether he was aware of that. Well, he was, as a writer in WWE on the creative team and how they handled it. So some good stuff. Matt McCarthy, always a great guest. Definitely worth checking out from last Thursday. And also, Pat McNeil and Greg Parks had the TLC postgame show. And then I had the Raw postgame show. And I also hosted the SmackDown postgame show with Greg Parks last night. So lots of good audio to catch up on if you haven't yet. Thanks, everybody, for your support. We also, as part of a VIP membership that I mentioned, have episodes of Jim Valley's Total Chaos radio show from the Attitude Era. We've been on a streak of airing pro wrestling spotlight shows that we drop every Thursday night for VIP members from the early 90s. But one of these weeks, we're going to sprinkle in a couple more of the Attitude Era Total Chaos radio shows. And to hear some more details on that really cool feature that comes with the VIP membership, retro radio shows from the early 90s and the Attitude Era. Here's some details on that. Thanks, everybody, for joining me. As a PW Torch Livecast listener, you've probably heard me talk about PW Torch VIP membership. One of the great perks about becoming a PW Torch VIP member at pwtorch.com/govip is access to vintage radio shows that are only available with a PW Torch VIP membership. The entire run of the Pro Wrestling Focus radio show that I hosted on KFAN in the early 1990s, over 100 episodes, available when you sign up instantly. Also, on an ongoing basis, we're adding more Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio shows hosted by John Arezzi in New York, which ran from the late 80s through the mid-1990s. These shows have not been heard since they aired originally on New York radio, and VIP members have access to listen to them exclusively as part of their VIP membership. Also, Total Chaos Radio, hosted by PW Torch Livecast Saturday Morning Wrestling host Jim Valley during the Attitude Era, are also part of a VIP membership, new ones added on a regular basis. These vintage classic radio shows with big-name interviews, guest analysts, including me, on a regular basis talking about the news of the day with the hosts, are accessible when you become a VIP member through our ad-free VIP website. You can stream them right on your phone or right on your computer, but also an RSS feed that is accessible only for VIP members via popular apps on iPhone, Android, and even iTunes. Check it out. It's a big perk that comes with a VIP membership. Get details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Have a blast listening to familiar voices from this live cast talk about wrestling from the 1990s through the Attitude Era exclusively as a PW Torch VIP member. We'd love to have you as a VIP member. Thanks, everybody, for joining us as a live cast listener. Follow me on Twitter at TheWadeKeller. Follow our brand at PW Torch and at MMA Torch. Until next time, Wade Keller thanking you and signing off. This is life.